consecutive time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. We're going to be chatting to Gary Rogers, who's announced his retirement after a trophy-laden career. We'll also pay tribute to double winners Piemonte United. And we're joined by Pat Fennon and Johnny McDonald. They'll be picking their SSE Airtricity League team of the season. But as ever, James O'Toole is with us. And James, 2020, we've always been remote, but I know that you're wearing a Christmas jumper. Fair play to you. You're in the festive mood.
I've come all Christmassy today, Adrian. I have. I've got my Christmas shirt on me, especially for today, especially
Describe
for this
it.
Podcast. It's
Describe
a blue
it.
Shirt with loads of Christmassy. It's got Rudolph on it. There's a snowman, Santa, presents, snowflakes. It looks quality, Adrian, if you could just see me now.
If I could actually look, I haven't seen you in ages. That's just the way I think. And come here, you were in Tala on Saturday. Piemonte United, 6 second-half goals. Winning the cup, beating Cork 6-0, some second half display from them, and great for them after the disappointment of cup finals in recent years.
Yeah, it was really, really good. It was such a change of a second half performance. Like Stephanie Roach sets it up just about 1 minute 20 seconds into the second half, she gets the goal scoring underway. But I feel really, really sorry for Cork. They're really good during the first half. There was a couple of balls O'Mahony tried to play that just didn't come off. They gave it a really, really good go in the first half. But then a team full of internationals, the likes of Stephanie, Anya, Duggan, Karen Duggan in the middle as well, who's lost out on a couple of cup finals. It was good to see her to win one eventually. The class just took over. And once the goals started going in, you were kind of praying that it wasn't going to get too bad. But it was a great occasion. It was a great day for women's sport, in fairness, not just the football, but the Camogie final on after it. It was a wonderful way to finish the season. Despite what most people thought, finished on Thursday evening in the Aviva Stadium, it didn't. It finished on Saturday evening in Tala, and Piemonte eventually three losses in a row, eventually get one.
Well, it certainly was a super Saturday for Piemonte United. Let's hear now from Anya O'Gorman, who lifted the FAI Cup.
Up goes the trophy, and the celebrations can begin, and Queen, we are the champions, is played. Congratulations to Piemonte, to Anya O'Gorman, who lifts the trophy as well. 6-0 winners today, deserving winners.
It's good to get it over the line, the double. I think this match was a long time coming around after like a long season with COVID and stuff. Yeah, so just delighted to get a cup win after the two losses the last two seasons.
Kind of toughish first half. I know you had a great chance to open the scoring, but they defended quite well. But when you got that goal, I mean, it just opened the floodgates, really, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It was typical kind of cup final in the first half. They came out of the blocks pretty strong and came at us as well. And I think it took us a while to get our passing game going, and very little created. So when we went in at half time, we said we just need to get our passing right. And then once we scored the first goal, we get 2 or 3. So a game of two halves, they might say.
Yeah. The first half didn't really tell what was going to happen for the second half, did it? I mean, Stephanie got a couple of nice goals, settled things down for you, and then you could just go out and enjoy it, couldn't you?
Yeah, I think so. I think then when we started enjoying our rhythm, our passing rhythm started to come into play. And we just started opening up and scoring goals and really enjoying the experience, and was able to get some substitutions on. We've an amazing squad, and they got their names on the score sheet as well.
Yeah, the strength of your depth of your bench, I mean, some Irish internationals to come on like Teagan to score goals as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think like I've been played with some amazing players, some amazing teams, but this is probably one of the best squads I've been a part of, and it's great for training week in, week out. We really push each other. So I know James has a headache picking even a squad, let alone a starting 11.
How's the season been for you? I mean, obviously a truncated season this time. How was the whole thing for you? I know it's a bit surreal, unfortunately, we couldn't have fans in, but how was the whole experience for you this year?
Yeah, I think it's been okay. Obviously, I think it's been long, so looking forward to a break now. It wouldn't be usually the middle of December that we'd run into. So looking forward to having a break now. I'm just happy that we got the double, and I'm going to hang this on the Christmas tree at my other gold medal.
Christmas tree along with my gold medal. Nice one, Anya O'Gorman. Great achievement for Piemonte United and James, everybody involved winning the double.
It's a fantastic achievement. It's not just for Piemonte United, it's for every team that was in that league this year. As they mentioned there, the whole COVID situation kind of threw them into a spin. They had like the Premier Division and the First Division, they had two pre-seasons to get over and then get back playing football. It was great for Cork. Cork obviously got their highest finish ever in the Women's League this year. But it's just great to get them, get that double underway. Arne finishing the season top goal scorer. But there's a couple of really good performances. Like Saoirse Noonan was very, very good. It's disappointing to see her lose out in the cup final. But the other girls that are there, the likes of, as I mentioned already, Karen Duggan, for her to actually eventually get to lift the trophy, it was wonderful. And not only that, her display deserved the goal she got as well.
Yeah, tough day for Cork City, but I'm sure they'll bounce back. But congratulations to Piemont United, double winners for 2020. Well, one of the big soccer stories of the last week, the retirement of Gary Rogers. Gary, it joins us on the line. Gary, why? Why? Say it's not so. Why have you decided to call it quits now at a mere 39 years of age?
I know, yeah, that's a big number. Look, I just felt the time was right. Adrian, it just, you know, it was something that I contemplated during the year. And I suppose with COVID and all that, we had a lot of time to think about things. And I spent a good bit of time at home and with kids and that. And I've three young kids, a four-month-old and two and six. So it's... you know, I think at 39, it's about time I've entered the real world and see what's out there for me, you know.
And yes, you could have played on. You're a fit guy, you know, one of the top keepers in the country. But obviously, you felt it's the right time. Is just that you need a change of direction in your life, is that it?
Not so much that I need a change of direction. I do feel, look, possibly could have played on. But, like, you know, I think, you know, the cup final win really cemented it for me. I spoke to a few people close to me and I spoke to a couple of former managers in the last month or two about, you know, my thoughts and, you know, the fact that we had won the cup final and we had the Europa League to come. I just felt that, you know, what do? You play on until you can't play anymore, or do you kind of walk away on your own terms and, you know, I finish on a high? And I've chosen to kind of to walk away, you know, while I still feel like I could possibly do it. But, you know, next year, if I only played a handful of games and then I walked away, would it be the same? And I just felt that Everton was in line to call it a day after the cup final win and the Europa League game against Arsenal.
I think I could be wrong here, Gary, but I think you're the last surviving member of Dublin City squad to be still playing football. But yes, what a way to finish it. The Friday, that game on Sunday in the Aviva, you made several excellent saves and injured your shoulder along the way. So I think the hard pitch was getting to you a bit, was it?
I injured that shoulder over in Molde in the warm-up. So it was kind of one that was niggling away. And I was probably patched together a little bit for the game against Arsenal. But the cup final, like, I just love the FAI Cup. And I think it's a brilliant occasion. And, you know, to be able to play in the cup final, like, it's the pinnacle of your domestic career to go and play in a cup final and, you know, to go and win one. I've been fortunate enough to lose a few as well, but to go and win one, and I just felt that was, you know, the perfect way to kind of to finish up. And obviously, look, the league wasn't what we wanted it to be this year, and we all know about, you know, the amount of games, and but we didn't do ourselves justice in the league. But, you know, to go and win a cup final, and obviously, you know, the game against Arsenal was just perfect way, really, you know.
Gary, how are you? Johnny McDonald here.
How are you, Johnny?
Listen, congratulations on your season and on your career. Fantastic. I think you've won a trophy since 2011, all the way through. Just you say you're thinking of having a break. Do you not think you'll miss the day-to-day stuff? And would you be thinking about maybe going in and using all of your experience in goalkeeping coaching or even in team coaching?
To be honest, look, there's no doubt I'm going to miss it, Johnny. Like, you know, I absolutely love training. It's probably as much as playing games. I really enjoyed, always did enjoy training and going in every morning. And there's no two ways about it. I am going to miss that. But at the same time, there was times this year where I'm going in training and I'm diving around the freezing cold and I'm thinking, there's a young fella beside me who I coached when he was a kid. And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, is this the way I'm really going to earn a living now for the next few years? It's time to move on, really, you know. I don't see myself, I suppose, stepping away from football altogether. I would like to kind of, I've done a sports management degree and I've done my coaching badges, so I've tried to prepare as best I can for life after football. Like, I'm obviously, look, now at this stage, I'm open to opportunities in terms of jobs outside of it and maybe, you know, in football as well. So, look, we just need to take a bit of time out and see what opportunities come my way and, you know, and take it from there.
And, Gary, when you started out all those years ago at Shelburne before moving on to St Francis and all the success with Dundalk, 5 Premier League titles, you know, a few cups in there as well, 5 cups, I think, in total. One with Drogheda United, one with Sligo Rovers, three with Dundalk, League Cups, what have you. Could you have imagined the career that lay before you when you started out?
No, certainly not. Especially, I suppose, coming from my background, like I was a Gaelic footballer, an outfield Gaelic footballer at that, before I kind of entered the world of playing professional soccer. And it certainly, you know, I didn't know, because I wouldn't have played, say, schoolboy football at a good level. I didn't know how good or bad I was, or whether I'd sink or swim in the League of Ireland, until I was thrown in there by John Noonan. He took me on loan from St Francis. I think Pat Fenlon would have been playing at Shelburne at the time. They had a great Shelburne team, and I used to train with Shells during the week, and I would go and play the game with St Francis at the weekend. So I was thrown in the deep end with probably the weakest team in the first division. So it was kind of a great experience for me to go and play football, and to join Harry McHugh the following year and win the first division was, I suppose, you know, a good kind of gauge to, you know, how I progressed. And I was kind of probably a quick learner, and because I would have missed a lot of underage football, but to get thrown into the first division and be able to kind of find my way, and you know, it's not something that I would have envisaged, you know, at the start of my career, that I would be 20 years on and having, you know, a pretty successful career and winning a few titles along the way.
Well, Pat Fenlon is with us on the line. Pat, you've played with and you've witnessed so many great goalkeepers down through the years, but Gary Rogers has to be right up there.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Congratulations or commiserations, I'm not sure which one it is, Gary, but I go back to when he was a Shell. He won a Shells as a kid, and I think there's a lesson there as well, like to go out on loan to Francis, and you know, he probably had the choice to stay at Shells, but like you said there, we had a good team and a good goalkeeper at the time, so to move on and, you know, try to get yourself playing quickly, I think there is a lesson there for some of the younger players as well, and even to go on loan to the likes of Francis, where you are, they were struggling at the time. So, you know, listen, he's had a fantastic career, there's not a lot more can be said. I think, you know, the fact that Gary's played till he's 39, I totally see where he's coming from, and you know, it's a long time to be involved at that elite level, at the top end of the game, where you've got to be on it week in, week out, and you're under the scrutiny. So, you know, I don't think he owes the game anything, or League of Ireland anything. So hopefully he enjoys his retirement.
Gary, any idea what you were doing 20 years ago today?
I was getting hiding in the dock for St Francis, because I seen somebody put it up on social media.
Yeah, that is James Rogers, who's been on this podcast, tweeted today, on this day 20 years ago, December 14th, 2000, the recently retired Gary Rogers suffered the heaviest defeat of his career as Dundalk beat St Francis 7-0 with goals from David Ward, Ant O'Reilly, who got two, Tommy Byrne, Donald Brohan, Martin Riley and John Flanagan. We've been lauding your career, but talk to us about 20 years ago today.
Was there any need to go through all the people that scored that day, Adrian, was
it? What are your memories of that one?
I tell you, my memories have been refreshed about that one in recent days, because my dad came into the house the other day and he was wearing a St Francis top that has managed to outlast my League of Ireland career. And my brother was with him, and the two of them were in and they were chatting, and they were saying that they actually remember, it was the first game that my brother went to, and he goes, "Geez, I remember going, and we were late getting there," and he said that we walked in and they met some fella at the gate, and no, we're two up, and they obviously thought that Dad and Keith were Dundalk supporters, and Dad was going, "Is there two up yet?" And he went in, and it was obviously Francis were two down, and but there was plenty. They got plenty of value for their money, even on the late game. But yeah, I do remember. I actually mentioned it to the young goalkeeper we played at Lone there last week, the week before, and then look, we had a big result. We won 11-0, and I did say it to him. I said, "Listen, you know, don't you keep a head up. Like, in fairness to him, he didn't have a bad game, but." I've been on the receiving end of that myself, so it's thanks for that one, Adrian.
That was a lovely moment when you made contact with the young goalkeeper at Athlone, 11-0, of course, just a couple of weeks ago, just a week before the cup final.
It's difficult for a
young goalkeeper, isn't it?
He was thrown in there the deep end, and to be fair, look, the Dundalk team that I would have played against, and you know, wouldn't have been the same quality as the Dundalk team he played against. You know, we were both two first division teams, and I got a hiding. So, like, you know, you're looking at the bottom team in the first division now, playing against, you know, one of the top teams that possibly ever played in the League of Ireland. So, in fairness, you know, it was a difficult one to be thrown into for him.
And over the years, you've played with some great players, of course, and great managers as well. Have you got a particular highlight or a moment that stands out, or are they all just great moments?
It's hard to kind of, you know, pinpoint one specific moment. You know, like, you know, we've had great times. Like, winning your first league title is very special. And, you know, I went to Sligo and was lucky enough to do that. And it was part of the reason why I left Pats to go to Sligo. I just felt that Sligo presented me with the best opportunity to win a league. And it was getting to the stage in my career where, you know, I hadn't won a league title. And you know, it was a major ambition. And I wanted to do that. And I felt that Sligo, at the time, you know, the team they had and the players that they were adding with Paul Cook, even though Paul didn't hang around for too long that year, but he had signed a wonderful squad, and that opportunity to go and win the league was amazing. And to win your first one is very special. But we have great times at Dundalk in European games and Bate Borisov, and even penalty save this year against Sheriffs to kind of set us up for the playoff game. So it's hard to kind of say that there's one moment that you would recognise. I know a lot of people would have said that, you know, the winning the Bate game 3-0 in Tala, like, and that was a phenomenal achievement to go and win it against a team of that stature and the manner that we did it. You know, that's probably the best game or performance and that's, you know, any League of Ireland team would have given, and to go and get yourself into the Champions League playoff game, you know, in the manner that we did, you know.
Yeah. And the managers that you played under, I'm thinking, you mentioned there Sligo, obviously Ian Barraclough, of course, now managing Northern Ireland. Obviously Stephen Kenny managing the Republic of Ireland. You know, to work under managers like that, what was that experience like?
Yeah, it's been great. Like, you know, you mentioned Stephen and Ian, and two of them were absolutely top class. I actually spoke to Stephen a couple of weeks ago and you know, I spoke to him about this decision that I was possibly going to make. And, you know, ran it by him just to have a chat with him, because he's a manager that I would trust and his opinion I would value. Like, same with Ian Barraclough. I would still be in contact with Ian. Obviously, he's in with Northern Ireland international team, and, like, great managers. But you look at the likes of Harry McHugh, would have done so much for me, and even Pete Matton at St. Pat's and stuff like that. We'd still be in contact with a lot of the former managers and stuff like that. So, like, it's great to have kind of played under such great people, and no, I really enjoyed it, you know.
And all the while you were involved with, you mentioned goalkeeping coaching and your background in Gaelic games and Gaelic football in particular with Meath. You know, you've been involved with the backroom set up there in Meath over the years, and also with Cavan as well. Is that an area that you'd like to explore possibly again in the future?
Yeah, I think that there's certainly an opening there, you know, in terms of goalkeeping coaching in the GAA. I think it's an area, like, You look at coaching in general for Gaelic, you know, there's so much gone into strength and conditioning and other areas of coaching, but the goalkeepers have been left behind. And, you know, it's such an important part of the game now that, you know, I would like to see some sort of licensing come in order to be able to, you know, get qualified coaches out there to teach young goalkeepers in the GAA as well. So, like, there's certainly, you know, there is positions there that I feel that need to be filled. And even in, you know, within the FAI, I think, you know, we used to have a goalkeeping department there, and now, look, with all the cutbacks and everything that's gone on, there used to be a director of goalkeeping where Paddy Bonner and Declan McIntyre were there involved, and them roles have gone. So there's certainly, you know, there's probably areas where, you know, goalkeepers need to be kind of looked after and developed. So, look, you never know. Like, it's just, we'll see what roles, I suppose, come about. But there's certainly, you know, areas that I'm certainly interested in.
Yeah. And what about the future for Dundalk, the club you're leaving behind? You know, there's, you know, potentially a lot of change in the air. Jim McGilton starts his new role this week. Are you confident about the future of Dundalk? Because some people are a little bit concerned about the whole Peak Six situation, you know, that their investment, that, you know, you just never know what the future holds. But how confident would you be about the prospects ahead for Dundalk as a club?
Hard to know right now at the minute. It's at a real turning point, and I think Jim will be a good appointment. I think, you know, a man of his knowledge and experience will be certainly an asset to Dundalk, and it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. And I think these first few weeks are going to be key, because you look at the amount of players that are out of contract, and then, you know, if you lose X amount of players, you have to bring in so many players then as well. So this is going to be a key period for him. But I think that his experience and knowledge of our league and the Northern League, and then his contacts in England, you know, should be a real good appointment for the club. That, you know, that he'll be able to, I suppose, bring in the players of the calibre that the club requires in order to maintain the success that we've had. But the one thing I would say, over the last number of years, and you go back to Stephen Kennedy, there was great continuity in Stephen's squads. When you look at, when I would have signed in 2015, he would have brought me and Ronan Finn into the starting team, and he kept everything that he had before. And the following year, I think he brought Patrick McElhenney and Robbie Benson in. And the following year, it was Sean Hoare and Jamie McGrath. And it wasn't massive wholesale changes. There was always good continuity and a good core group there. So this will be, it will be interesting to see how this off-season goes for Dundalk in terms of, you know, the players that they bring in and the players that they let go.
Yeah, Gary, do you think there's going to be more? I think there needs to be more than just what, as you were saying, Stephen used to bring in two players here, two players there. But I think there's going to be a need for more, which might unsettle them for maybe half the season going forward, I'd say.
Yeah, well, it's obvious with the amount of players that are out of contract that there is probably going to be maybe, you know, 7, 8, 9 new faces coming into the squad. So that's why, you know, it's key to see how Jim gets on with the recruitment and what players he does keep and Filippo. But I think, you know, from obviously experienced Filippo and Giuseppe over the off season or over this season, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they put their stamp on it over pre-season, because they basically were thrown in the deep end and, you know, handed a squad of players that, you know, they'd never met before. So when they have put their own squad together and, you know, added to what they already have, because there is huge quality still remaining at the club that is under contract. So it'll be interesting to see how the pre-season goes for them and what stamp they put on their squad, because I'm sure they will have a change in tact in terms of the way they approach things. And I know that, you know, they love plenty of time on the training ground and they can see double and treble sessions to really kind of put their way of playing on the squad. So it's going to be very interesting to see. And obviously for me, looking in as a former player for Dundalk, it'll be extra interesting to see what way they do things.
And are you optimistic in terms of you mentioned there Filippo Givagnoli, the new manager, and of course he's signed his contract. A lot of fans of Dundalk were a little sceptical when he arrived along with Giuseppe Rossi. But are you confident that they're the right duo along with Shane Keegan to drive Dundalk on again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's always going to be people who are sceptical of the unknown. But to come in and do the job that they've done, you know, in a short space of time, I know there's a lot of tension on the coaching badges. It just goes to show the coaching badges are not all the cracked up to be as well. But, you know, they've come in to a completely, you know, foreign environment for them and managed to kind of turn around. I know a league form didn't turn around, but to qualify for the group stages is not something that is easy to do. And you can say what you like about the draw being kind, but, you know, we went to the Sheriff side that we beat over there was the key game. And that was a team that would have been rated much higher than us. And far bigger budget than us as well. So, like, to do what they've done and to win a cup, it just goes to show that they have got the ability, you know, to do the job. So it will be interesting to see next year when the pressure's on in the league from the start how it goes, you know.
And Gary, for you yourself, you mentioned that you're going to weigh up your options in terms of, you know, your future career. Are you open to all kinds of offers, or is there a particular area of expertise that you'd like to perhaps go into? Would you see coaching perhaps further down the line as a potential career path?
Yeah, I'm not going to kind of pigeonhole myself into coaching, because I know that coaching is the one thing that I certainly can do, you know, because, like, I've obviously been around football for a long time and I've done my coaching badges. So I'm interested to look at other areas that, you know, when you've been kicking balls for 20 odd years, I think going into coaching then to kick balls and for another 20 years is probably not the ideal career path, and if you get injured you can't work. So I'm looking at other areas. That's why I went and did the sports management degree, in order to kind of broaden the opportunities for life after football. And I think that's what I'm going to look at now, because I wasn't able to explore them areas when you're playing football, because you're saying, well, I can't do that because, you know, I'm playing and stuff like that. So I have to kind of weigh it up and see what opportunities come around, and you know, I won't rush into anything, but we'll see what happens over the next month or two. I'm looking forward to spending a bit of time with my family, my wife, who's obviously supported me throughout my career, and they've made huge sacrifices themselves in order for me to be successful in my playing career. So it's time to give a little bit back, I think, and just take a bit of a breather and see what the future holds.
OK, well, listen, fair play. Enjoy the downtime in the meantime. Enjoy Christmas and well done on such a superb career, Gary Rogers.
Thanks very much, Ed. Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you. That's Gary Rogers following his retirement from football. Hopefully we'll see him back in some guise in League of Ireland football. Now, lads, let's get on to reviewing the season. Let's start with Johnny McDonald. Johnny, you said it several weeks ago, just after the restart, that, you know, you expected, or you wouldn't be surprised at all, if Shamrock Rovers went all the way through the remainder, albeit of a shortened season, unbeaten. And you were spot on. Very impressive from Shamrock Rovers. I'm sure it'll hurt, and it's still hurting, the fact that they didn't go on to complete the double. But a terrific league campaign, certainly for Shamrock Rovers and for Stephen Bradley, and obviously for Jack Byrne as well.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying it was an easy call, but to go unbeaten was fantastic. They have a class group of players. They've been building up over the last few years. But there would be a disappointment, because there's not too many years, Adrian, where you get a chance to do the double, and Pat will tell you that as well. So you've got to seize them opportunities and make sure you take them, and they will be disappointed. But in fairness to Dundalk, with the season that they had, they probably deserve to get something over, and congratulations to Dundalk on winning the FAI Cup. But over the 18 matches, you know, they were relentless, Shamrock Rovers. You know, the squad themselves pushed one another, not only to win matches, but for positions in the team, but for positions in the squad, to be on the bench. And, you know, they tried to win every game, every minute of every game. I thought they were very unlucky. We're talking about Europe, Gary, there. I thought they were unlucky to get AC Milan in Europe, because I think they would have had a great opportunity of making the league stages if they got through the rounds. But, you know, going forward, you know, they have the squad to get involved in that stuff next year. But a brilliant season for Shamrock Rovers, I have to say.
Pat, obviously you were involved with Shamrock Rovers up to a few years ago. Do you expect them now to dominate over the next few years? Obviously Dundalk will have a say in that, and perhaps even Bowes, who knows. But certainly Shamrock Rovers in a very strong position right now.
No, absolutely. I concur with what Johnny said there in relation to their season. You know, it's always dangerous to say that you can go and dominate, because we've seen it happen before and it doesn't materialise. And you're looking at the league now and you're thinking there's probably only Dundalk that can match them from a financial point of view, and that normally leads to dominance. Whether Dundalk, like you spoke to Gary about, whether that investment is still there going forward and how big it is, we'll see. But Rovers are in a great position. They've got a really good squad, you know, strong. The concern for them will be, obviously, Jack Byrne is going to be a big concern for whether he stays or goes. I think Joey O'Brien in the final as well. And I think we've seen when he went off how badly Rovers missed him. But their recruitment has been good the last few years. So I would certainly expect them to be the team to be for the next few seasons, that's for certain. I think to be really disappointed with the cup final, because I thought they dominated the game up to Dundalk's equalisers and then lost their way a little bit. So, but it's difficult to do doubles, you know, even if they have been the dominant team, particularly when you're coming up against the Dundalk side that, you know, are desperate to win a trophy. So, but they will definitely be there or thereabouts for the next three or four seasons with the squad they have, and obviously the backers and investment they have.
James, the Jack Byrne situation is obviously a crucial one for Shamrock Rovers, and their fans are watching that one with interest. They'd love to see him stay. It's in the balance. I think he's away on holidays at the moment, but he is such a vital player for them and has been.
Yeah, he is, and he's a breath of fresh air for the league itself, because you can see these quality players in him where people were thinking, oh, it's only the League of Ireland. But then you see the likes of Jack Byrne completely controlling games, and brings a boost not just to Shamrock Rovers, but to the whole league, because then people start getting interested in him when players like that are here. I think it's an interesting the story last week where Mick McCarthy was thinking about taking him over to Apoel Nicosia. I think that would be quite interesting for him. I think it's a different type of football. I wouldn't be overly pushed on him going to the UK, to tell you the truth. I think his style of football is probably suited somewhere else. He had a good run when he was in Holland. So I'd be looking elsewhere, really. If I was him, I'd be looking somewhere better than the UK, where he can actually impose his style of play on the pitch and show people what he's fully capable of. I think the Apoel one is an interesting thing. I'm not too sure whether Rovers can keep him. To tell you the truth, I think it'd be unfair to keep him even. But it just depends on who fills in that role for Rovers going ahead.
Pat, we were talking about doubles and winning doubles. You did it with Bowes. They finished second this season. Very solid season. But it's going to be very hard for Bohemians to continue to try and push, because, as you mentioned, the resources at Bohemians compared to, say, Shamrock Rovers or Dundalk, that's always going to be an issue for Keith Long and for Trevor Colley, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But I think Bowes, you know, are different. You know, they've got their eye on a couple of things going on. Obviously, the stadium development, you know, the work they've done off the pitch and on the pitch, you know, has been really, really impressive. They've got, hopefully, that stadium development at Dalymount. I think Bowes have had a great season again this year. They split Rovers and Dundalk. If you'd have said at the start of the season, you'd have probably said no chance. But they did it on merit. They were really good. You know, I think the only thing missing from Bowes at the moment is a trophy. You know, it's going to be difficult to win the league, but I think they'll be, you know, maybe targeting the League Cup or the FAI Cup next season, because the next step for them is to win something. You know, they've developed as a team. They've brought some great young players. You know, so for the next step, all that success is good, but as a manager or coaches, you want to win something. You know, so I think they will target something next season, definitely. But again, Keith has done a fantastic job there, but there's a big different development going on at Bowes, you know, different to Rovers. Rovers are now in the position where Bowes hope to be in 5 years' time, that they've got their academy set up, they've got their stadium developed, and, you know, continuous development. So I think it's a little bit different for both of them clubs, but it'll be hard for Bowes to catch Shamrock Rovers on the pitch at the moment.
Yeah, and Johnny, Dundalk of course finished third in the league, great FAI Cup triumph of course, but right now it seems like they're at a crossroads, and it could be a key one as well, couldn't it?
It could be, and we spoke about it with Gary in depth there about the peak six and players out of contract, new manager coming in, so, you know, he's just signed a new contract, so players coming in and players going out. Could be I wouldn't say a transition time for Dundalk. I think with the group that they have, they still should be able to be in that top three. I think it's a brilliant opportunity for Bowes, again, as Pat said, to get between Rovers and Dundalk and try and hold on. And maybe try and pinch a player or two that's floating around Dundalk or Rovers. Bowes could try and pinch one or two of them players. But, you know, for Dundalk, it's been manic and hectic over the last couple of months with Europe and stuff like that. But, you know, as I say, they've got to hang in there and make sure that they're in the melting pot for next season for Europe as well. And you can't write them off, but it's going to be difficult to claw Shamrock Rovers back.
Okay, listen, we'll dash through the rest of the league season. Sligo Rovers, great campaign, James, fourth in the end. Terrible start, no points after four games, but they've claimed European football. Liam Buckley adding to his squad in the last week or so, and some significant signings and re-signings as well. But fourth in European football, you know, back in March when COVID struck, nobody would have foreseen Sligo Rovers claiming Europe.
Not really, but when you've seen them come back in the game against Derry City up in the Brandywell, they were absolutely excellent. And from then on, they put a little bit of a run together, wobbled a bit, but then Liam got them back on course. And the European football, it's a carrot to dangle in front of players. If you look at, like Zed McGinty, he was wanted by other clubs. But the fact that European football is there, it's something to dangle in front of players you want to keep, and for players that Liam would like to bring into the club. An excellent season overall for them. I'm over the moon for them, to tell you the truth, and the supporters, because they get such great backing around Sligo. It's absolutely ridiculous the amount of funding they get from the locals. And it's great for them. Hopefully, by the time that European football comes around, with fans in the grounds, and they'll all get to enjoy it together.
Yeah, Waterford finished fifth, Pat. Of course, you were involved with Waterford up to a year or so ago. Strange old season, because going into the final round of matches, they had the potential to secure European football. You know, up and down season. Alan Reynolds obviously departed. John Sheridan came in. We had the whole pub league saga. Very, very curious season for Waterford. What about the future for the Blues?
Yeah, I think it's difficult. I think they did well to finish in fifth, to be fair to them, because at the start of the season, they were very late in recruiting a squad, and they went outside and took a gamble on some players from outside, and most of them did quite well for them. So I think that the fact that you're still in the hunt going into the last game, they'll see as a disappointment. But I would have thought at the start of the season, if they finished fifth, they'd have been more than happy with that. Listen, it's the same as last season for Waterford. It's whether Lee Power is willing to continue that and fund the club, and, you know, that's difficult for him as well. And I think the year previous, where they lost that European position, this year there's a bit of controversy around as well, suspensions and everything else, and he might be looking at thinking, you know, do we need this? You know, if this is the way it's going to be run, well then, you know, maybe I'm better off putting my money somewhere else. So it all depends on what Lee wants to do with the club. Listen, it's a fantastic club. James talked about Sligo there, and Waterford is very, very similar. You know, it's a big soccer city, huge support, you know, great potential, great facilities. So it's the one of the clubs that you don't want to lose out. We've lost Cork City out of Premier Division this year, which is a nightmare disaster for the league. the likes of Waterford and Sligo were big, big clubs that we need to keep in the Premier Division. But it will all depend, obviously, on what Lee wants to do going forward.
Johnny McDonald, St. Pat's, discuss.
Okay, yeah, how long have I got? And I was young. Look, the bedding period is over for Stephen. It's time to get going. Now, they need a goal scorer, absolutely jumping out. Sometimes you just have to deal with the priorities. You know, they probably have enough around to be challenging for Europe next year, but they definitely need a goal scorer.
You would have thought that Georgie Kelly would be the man to do that.
Yeah, well, you know, Georgie hasn't pulled up too many trees since he left UCD. In fairness, he went to Dundalk and found it difficult to get in there. And, you know, maybe this season, you know, it might be his season, but he hasn't done it at Pats, and they had a go at him. But they need to find a goal scorer to keep them up there, to be challenging with the likes of Sligo and Waterford, and to be getting into Europe, because they definitely would have missed the European money this year. And as James said earlier, it's easier to be drawing players in to a squad or a team when you're challenging and you're qualified for Europe. So, as I said, big season for Stephen ahead and a big season for Pats, you know, just finishing in sixth place this year. They need to be up there in the top three or four and challenging for Europe.
Expect new signings in the coming days, I would imagine, at Richmond Park. James, how long do you want to talk about Derry City in seventh?
I could only use one line from a Derry native, Peter Cunha, and that is, things can only get better. And that sums up the season, to tell you the truth. It was absolutely
awful. Bit of a 90s
awful.
Reference there.
Yeah, it was absolutely awful. Players need to be signed quick. A lot of players have left the club. And I think Declan and his backroom staff have to sit down very quickly with the backer of the club and sit down and see where the club wants to go in the future, because it seems to be there will be a change in direction there this year.
What kind of direction do you think the club will take?
I think they'll have to look within the city itself, and unfortunately with the new FIFA rulings, they can't look into Inishowen like they used to, because they can't be signing people who are under 18 in the Inishowen into their under 8 setup, which is where a lot of players like Mark Farron would have come from there, Gareth McGlynn would have come from there, the two McNamee brothers would have come from there as well. So change has to happen in and around Derry to look for to basically get a proper under 8 setup going and bring players through that and back to the way Derry was even around Stephen Kenny's time, where a lot of locals were playing in the club.
Pat, obviously you had an involvement with Derry as well. I mentioned the word crossroads a while ago. They seem to be at a crossroads as well, Derry City, in terms of the future.
Yeah, they do. I think, you know, they said at the start of the season that they invested in the squad. I actually thought their squad was quite decent. I don't know what happened. They never seemed to get going at all. You know, and James, it's a difficult one, because sometimes you get periods where local players are blooming and flourishing, and then you get other periods where they're not there, and you got to be careful that, you know, you don't stick yourself with just taking players from a very short radius. I think we're all talking about, you know, Pat's major change of players, Dundalk a major change of players, Derry a major change of players, Waterford a major. Where are they all coming from? You know, we don't have that many top talented players, so you've got to try broaden the horizon and widen the net. And you know, it's difficult for Derry at the moment, because they've underachieved, there's no doubt about that. They would have expected to be you know, where Sligo or Waterford are at the moment. I think that they would have seen that as a good season, trying to finish fourth and get to Europe through that entrance. But it is a difficult one for them, because they've taken players from the outside as well. They obviously all haven't come up to the mark. So it's easy to say to go and get players, but it's not as easy, and Johnny will tell you as a manager, it's not as easy as people think it is. To attract players into the League of Ireland can be difficult at times, so you just got to be careful how much you change, you know. Again, I'm surprised to hear James saying that the underage system is not good, because that's the one thing they would have prided themselves on, was their underage players and a lot of players from the locality. Maybe they need to look a little bit further afield in Northern Ireland to see if there are more players around, you know, from that end of it. But it's a big season coming forward for Derry, because again, another big club. You want to do well, you want them to be successful. So it is a big, big, big season coming up for Declan and his staff.
Johnny, Ollie Horgan continuing to work minor miracles with Finn Harps. Minor miracles, major miracles. The great escape, he managed to pull it off yet again.
Ollie, you know, fantastic. You know, you kind of know every season where they're going to be. He knows where he's going to be. But look, you know, they've got to try and move away from that. They need to get off to a start, you know, they need to get a bit of consistency. Players he brought in last year served them well, and he pulled them out and they won matches when they needed to win them. You know, I just think, you know, how long can he keep it going for? Finishing up on 20 points, you know, they're only 5 or 6 points off Dundalk. In fairness, I know it's a shortened season, but look, he needs to get a bit of consistency going the season. Difficult again, always competing with Derry City for players, so it's always difficult, and Sligo Rovers. So they probably get the last pickings of the drafts, for the want of a better explanation. And it's really, really difficult for them. And just getting the players in and getting that consistency and staying in the league.
Pat Shelburne, another of your old... hey, is there a club in the League of Ireland that you weren't, haven't been involved in?
There was only four. Leave it at that.
Yeah. But Shelburne, the wheels really came off. They came off spectacularly, didn't they? Because they seemed to be safe, but they just slipped away in the end, relegated. And that cup defeat in Athlone. And after that, it was just downhill all the way, and lost out in the playoffs. But a very quick return after, you know, that they would have hoped to bed in. And obviously they've made a lot of signings in terms of the first division for 2021, some notable signings as well. But, you know, the manner in which they were relegated was very, very hard to take, wasn't it?
Oh, listen, there's nothing else to say. It's a disastrous season for Shelburne, to be fair. And, you know, the euphoria getting up and their gates were really big before COVID-19. The club looked like it was on the up. And in fairness, it probably still is. You know, it fell apart, didn't it? You know, they won a couple of games back-to-back close at the end of the season. I think they thought, you know, that's enough, we've got enough on the board, but they didn't reckon for Finn Harps doing what they've done. And but they look like they lost their way for whatever reason. The result in Athlone was an eye-opener, particularly when you see what Dundalk did to Athlone in the semi-final. And, you know, it was a real disappointing season. I think their recruitment now is probably, maybe already they've got a stronger squad than they did have last season. Going into the first division, you know, so they'll want to bounce back as quick as possible. Like I said, that development with Alium, if they're involved in that, you know, the last place they want to be is stuck in a rut in the first division when that happens. You know, they've recruited well so far. You know, you'd imagine themselves in Galway and whatever happens at Cork will be fighting around for the first division title. But, you know, there's good people there now, and, you know, there's always been good people there. Joe Casey has stepped away and the new owner is in there, and you know, they're trying to build something. So, but it's such a blow to them to get relegated straight away. And it'll take them a time to recover. But in football, you don't have a long time. And they've got to get the recruitment right. I think that's massive. And they've started that really well. And again, you want to see Shells back in the Premier Division.
Yeah. And Cork City too, James. Pat used the word a disastrous season for Cork City a little while ago. Neil Fenn left the club midway through the season. Colin Healy took over towards the back end. But, you know, the writing was on the wall for a long time. And getting back to the Premier Division, that's going to be such a huge challenge because, as we know, the First Division, it's so, so competitive, and it's going to be competitive yet again in 2021, isn't it?
It is indeed. Like, Pat won't particularly notice, but when you get relegated down there, unless you get back up the very next season, it's a struggle to get back up because the teams are just getting better and better and better. It's so close in the First Division. As we mentioned it ourselves going into the last day of the season, 7 teams could have either ended up as champion or in the playoff out of a 9-team group. So it's such a tight league. For Cork itself, this season can only be put down as an absolute farce. Starting back even the previous season, the way that Neil Fenn came into the squad, not knowing exactly who he had with a couple of games left. He obviously built the squad he thought could survive the whole season, but then COVID hits, players go home to the UK, they don't come back, so he has to rebuild the squad again. And whatever way, whatever happened, it just didn't click. It's unfortunate to see them go down, but from the outset, they looked as if they were going to struggle. And unfortunately, that struggle led to them being First Division next season for the 2021 season.
And two teams, of course, Johnny, coming up in the shape of Drogheda United crown champions, and a marvellous achievement by Tim Clancy and Longford Town as well. Look, at almost immediately people will say the challenge for both those clubs next year will be to remain in the Premier Division, but in truth that's just a reality, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it all comes back down to recruitment and budgets and money. And you know, I don't know what sort of a budget Drogheda will have, but what they will need to have next season is a good start to the season, get a few points on the board. You know, again, get a bit of consistency, positivity around the place. The town of Drogheda will give the team great support. The supporters are really, really good up there, and they'll get good financial support. Longford, it's going to be really difficult. You know, one of the problems is, you know, coming up from the fourth division, you know, you think the players that you have might be good enough just to keep you there, but there's a huge, huge step sometimes going from the fourth division into the Premier Division, especially at the top end of it. But it's going to be difficult times for Longford, I'd say, especially well, as I said, with draw, they might have a better chance, and their goal will be to be pushing on and chasing the likes of Finn Harps.
All right, lads, your team of the year. I tell you what we'll do. We'll run through the PFAI Premier Division team of the year, and if we hear any dissenting voices afterwards, grand. So they went with Alan Manus. This is obviously the PFAI team of the year. Alan Manus of Shamrock Rovers in goal. Andy Lyons of Bohemians. Roberto Lopez and Lee Grace as the central defensive pairing. And Tyrek Wilson of Waterford. Keith Buckley of Bowes and Aaron McInniff in the centre of midfield. On the flanks, Danny Grant of Bohemians. Tremendous season he had. Michael Duffy on the other wing. Jack Byrne, of course, roving around the place. And Andre Wright up front. Johnny McDonald, your assessment of the PFAI team of the year, nailed on, bang on, or are there any places that you would feel, I'm not so sure about that?
Yeah, I the likes of Aaron Green and fellas like that, I would have got him into the squad somewhere. I really would. Manus and Rogers, not much between them. I think Manus was great. You know, I think Scales done well at Rovers. Also, you know, I stuck a team in him like with Cleary, Hoare, Scales as a back three, Duffy on the flanks with Green, Shields, a holding player, McInniff, McElhenney, and Bowen just in front of them. And I give McMillan a bit of a go up front. I know he scored in recent weeks and a hat-trick, but, you know, that's the kind of a group we're playing. I'm putting a second team and a deputy of Andy Lyons in, the likes of Robbie Benson in there, a fella, a Sligo, Lewis Banks, good player on the right wing. So, you know, there's lots of fellas, John Mountney, subs. Look, it's all about opinions, but usually the best players in the best clubs usually get into the squad, but there's always one or two that probably deserves a place. But the likes of Adam McInniff and McElhenney for me in midfield, Jack Bourne, Shields obviously doing the holding role, but yeah, and Jack Bourne, as I said, running the show from the 10.
What are your thoughts, Pat?
Yeah, I think, listen, it's always difficult when you're trying to pick teams, you know. I think the goalkeepers have been mentioned, but I think Brian Murphy deserves a mention in there. I think he was fantastic for Waterford this season. Didn't get a mention at all, even in the top three goalkeepers, which surprised me. The other one that I, you know, like Joey O'Brien has to be in the starting 11 for me. He was immense for Rovers this year. He's the one sort of kept him going, kept him organised, you know. Gary O'Neill, obviously really good for Rovers in that position. You know, but I think they've got it right with most of them. But it's always difficult to pick teams at the end of the season because you're going to offend somebody. But and I'd agree with Johnny, because I think what Aaron Green gives to Rovers as a forward, he allows the other players play. We've been saying for a long time, our people outside have been saying, he doesn't score enough goals. But what he does is, you've got Bourke and Bourne, who are the top scorers. You know, he allows them, you know, to have a platform to play. So he probably spends too much time away from the goal. But a lot of that is the way Rovers play. So I think his work rate and his honesty, you know, he's had a very, very good season. I think, you know, harsh for him to be out of it. But listen, like I said, there's probably plenty of players will think they justify to be in that team of the season, but you're never going to get it all right.
James, who else would you make a case for in a team of the year?
This used to be the worst time of the year for me, I have to say, Adrian, because we used to get all the pundits,
jumpers and stuff,
teams. No, every year it was up to me to get the pundits to give me in their teams of the year. And despite going through it methodically, they'd still have a row at the end of the day that not everybody they picked were in it or anything like that. So it's always one that causes a row. I think Pat's right with Brian Murphy should be mentioned. I think Ed McGinty could well be mentioned as goalkeeper of the year as well.
Sure.
I think Scales has been immense this season, coming in at the Rovers left full. Joey O'Brien doesn't get a mention as well. I think he was excellent. And as the lads have already said, when he went off in the cup final, he was missed massively. McInniff through the middle, absolutely brilliant. Dave McMillan, over the last, since Filippo come in, seems a new lease of life under Filippo, scoring goals, creating goals. I absolutely, the two lads have mentioned this, I love Aaron Green. I absolutely love him. The only player I can think in the league prior to Aaron Green that was such a torment was Darren Meenan. He used to torment defenders and torment wingers. And because he's doing that, and he's doing all that legwork up front, Aaron Green, as Pat said, it's creating space behind for fellas to run into. It's creating defenders causing trouble, and they're scoring goals off his back. So I think he could be mentioned as well. But, you know, it's one of these things that anybody can pick a team, and there'll always be an argument, no matter what happens with them. But there's been some good performances, and I think they'd be the ones I would be looking at to add to that team, if possible.
Here's one to throw at you, Johnny. Is there a left of centre, off the scales player who people perhaps mightn't look at, and you'd say to yourself, if I was managing, I'd be looking at him because you know, he's got real potential. Is there anyone that stands out, be it in the Premier Division or the First Division for you? An unsung hero, if you like.
I think Rory Feely is a fella that can play at a higher level. I really do. I think Lee Desmond at Pats is a fella who's a late developer, and he could move up into the next, step up into the next level. I really do, especially Lee on the left side. But yeah, probably Lee Desmond is the one that would jump out for me.
Do you know who I liked, Pat? And I only saw Watford a couple of times. Was Timmy Sobowale at right back?
Yeah, Timmy was there when I was down there with Alan Reynolds initially when in the First Division. And listen, he came in and did quite well. He probably just needs to learn the game, and he can be a little bit erratic at times, and that's just his game and his nature. Again, he hasn't played a lot of football, so like these young players, it's trying to teach them the game, and you can take that out of his game. Particularly as a defender, you can't be erratic, and you know when you're playing, know when it's time to go and when it's time to sit. And but there are things, like I said, as you play, you get experience of. And Timmy's a decent bear, big, strong boy as well, good attitude to the game, you know, good around the place. So, but I agree with Johnny as well. I think Lee Desmond is a player that there is more in there. You know, I think the question around Lee is he. He's so comfortable on the ball. Is he a left back? Is he a left side of centre half? Is he a holding midfielder? Like so, and I think Pats need to get more out of him, you know. But I think I also think Danny Grant had a very, very good season for Bowes this year. I thought he was really, really good. He gave them that extra bit of oomph when they needed it in certain games, you know. And Andre Wright improved no end as well for Bowes, I thought, this year. And if they don't hold on to him, that's going to be a difficult one for them to replace.
Yeah, do you think he would do well in England, Danny Grant?
Yeah, listen, when you're talking to people in England, the one thing they're looking about is, you know, is he aggressive enough? Is he quick? You know, and there's no doubt that Danny Grant is quick. You know, has he got a temperament to play at that higher level? That's, for me, is a little question mark on him when I see him and people get after him or get about him, he can't react. So, again, young player, there are things you can hopefully work from. But he's got ability. There's no doubt about it. And he's brazen. You know, he believes in what he can do himself, which I love. You know, so, again, another one that Bowes won't be talking up. They don't want to hold on to him. But there is a lot of talk at the moment that he may be further off.
James, a player, you know, from left to centre that, you know, you think, oh, wow, I was impressed every time I saw him. Anybody stand out here? Maybe not.
Left-hand side, I think Darragh Leahy was absolutely brilliant this year.
I saw him.
Owen was very, very good. He hit, like, in fairness to him, he went off, he played under 21s. Kieran Coll was actually constantly solid.
Terrific,
from the First Division, I think young Manning in the First Division, anytime I've seen him, he's absolutely fantastic. Really, really well, getting on the ball, scoring goals. Really, really good. That's about the players there that you're looking at. I think the season itself, bar the top two or three teams, nobody's been really consistent enough to get into that team this season, if the truth be told. But yeah, those couple of players maybe could fit in there. I know Michael Duffy's got in, but I don't think Michael Duffy was used as well as he could have been this season. And particularly in the cup final, they showed he didn't get the ball to him until the 66th minute. And when he gets it, a goal comes from it. But it's solid enough. It'd be interesting to see how, especially our left-sided players, get on next season.
Pat, it's good to reflect on the year because it's been such a strange year, and obviously for so many people it's been a very, very hard year. But looking ahead to the future, to 2021, at this stage we simply don't know what's around the corner, do we, in terms of the league? We don't have a start date, sponsor. It's a bit troubling.
It is. Listen, I think in general it's you know, everybody wants to see the back of 2020, and you know, outside of football alone, it's been a very difficult year for everybody. And you know, the one thing you want, I suppose, coming into the new year is everybody's healthy and safe, and we're able to move forward. That's the main thing, because without that we can't have anything. So I think it's a difficult, like you say, if you go back to the football side of it in relation to the league, it's you know, it is a difficult time for them to get things in place for the start of next season. You know, but there's people employed in the FAI to make sure that happens. So they've got to get working on that, make sure that we have a sponsor and we do have a start date, and, you know, in conjunction with government and everything else. And it was good to get the season done. I know a lot of people talked about 18 games. It wasn't realistic, you know, but that's what we had. And, you know, that's the way it had to be. And it's finished now, and it's time to look forward to hopefully there looks like there's a little bit of hope on the horizon for everybody. Within football and outside of football, so you're hoping that we can get back to some sort of normality for next season.
Johnny, finally, your hopes for 2021?
Yeah, look, you know, again, like what Pa said, I think with all the teams, they can only prepare, get themselves in line, and just, you know, be governed by the state, by the government, and the FAI can only go off that. I agree with Pa, they get the season finished. you know, to get the cup done. You know, the involvement in Europe was great, and just line yourself up and get yourself ready, and just hopefully we can get some clarity from the FAI and, you know, guide us in the right direction and lead us forward. But as I said, it's out of their hands at the moment. You know, we've got the vaccination stuff coming in. But look, just condolences to anyone who lost anyone during this pandemic, I have to say. In football and outside of football and in life, it's been a difficult year.
Well said. All right, listen, lads, we leave it there. Many thanks to Johnny McDonald, to Pat Fennan and James O'Toole as well. Until the next time, from us all, bye-bye.